Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
On today's Caped Wonder Superman podcast, the Salkind universe expands from the big screen to the TV screen with Superboy.
Sam Rizzo from Superboy the Legacy is our guest. And we are taking you back to 1988, where it all started.
This is the Caped Wonder Superman podcast with Jay Towers and Jim Bowers on iHeartRadio.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another Caped Wonder Superman podcast in Detroit, Michigan. I'm Jay Towers, and just outside of Las Vegas, as always, is the great Jim Bowers. Jim, hello to you.
Hello, Jay, and hello, everybody. I tell you what, I have been having a fantastic week here, Jay, in Las Vegas. And I can't wait to tell you why.
Yeah, I said to Jim earlier, does anyone work out there? Because you guys are having so much fun. You and our friend Sam Rizzo are together in Vegas this week. For Sam, it's all about Superboy.
He flew out here from Chicago, and he brought an amazing collection of original costumes and props. And he's just so excited that we're photographing and archiving all of this. So welcome, Mr. Sam Rizzo.
Thank you, Mr. Bowers. Jay, it's good to talk to you. Thank you guys for having me on the podcast today. Yeah, it all started back in 1989 for me. I didn't see the Superman films like you guys did. You guys had the pleasure of seeing those movies on the big screen. But for me, I caught on with Superboy the TV series back in the summer of 89. My father turned on the television with my younger brother, Anthony. And in that summer, the first episode I ever saw was Bizarro the Thing of Steel. And it was on the power station, Channel 50 in Chicago. And it aired two episodes back to back. And ever since then, the rest is pretty much history. I was hooked. And ever since then, just have been a fan. And I've been lucky enough to meet a number of the cast members and to attend shows with them. And it's just been a dream for me. And now to own part of the Superboy history, like, it's just mind-boggling for me. When I acquired them a few years ago, I just kind of stored them and put them away. Really never had a chance to examine them. But now we are documenting them and going over them, and we've found some really, really interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's a great process, Sam. When you start photographing something like a costume or any kind of prop, you know, you're setting up the lighting and the camera angles, and you're positioning the item, and you start noticing things that maybe you hadn't seen before. And that's what's really been fun for me, Sam, is not only being able to closely inspect these artifacts, we try to figure out what was the story behind this item. Why is it in the condition it's in? Look at the little quirks or little unique qualities about it. So the connection, really, if I may, is to why we're here today, Sam, and why we're talking about Superboy. Is because it falls within the Salkind verse. You want to tell us a little bit about that and how the show came to be?
After Superman IV, Canon still had the rights to the Superman films, the film options. You know, Supergirl didn't do as well at the box office as we hoped. Ilya decided, what is the last piece of Superman property that I can mine, and decided to go to television.
Now, this is Ilya Salkind, who we all know was involved as producer of the Superman movies along with his dad, Alexander.
That's right. The first season was very up and down, but the second season was pretty much all action, and they hit the ground running in the latter half of that first season.
You're talking about season one that started in 1988, and that was John Newton, right? And he was the first Superboy for that season, and he had an interesting story too, right? Because I believe he didn't do a whole lot of acting and auditioned for this, and it was really one of his first gigs.
Yeah, he was a total unknown. They found him in North Carolina. Funny enough, he went on a casting call for Weekend at Bernie's, and Lynn Stallmaster found him and said, you'd be perfect for this role, and it turned out to be Clark Kent and Superboy.
Yeah, and Lynn Stallmaster, if some of you think you've heard that name before, he was directly involved with finding Christopher Reeve for the Superman movies way back when. So That's just one of many connections between the movies and this TV series.
For that first season, it was pretty cool for me. I was 13 years old, so I had been through the Superman films with Christopher Reeve, and I was excited, and what caught my attention was that this Superboy was wearing a costume that looked like a Christopher Reeve Superman costume. It was almost identical. The second thing that really blew me away was they were shooting this in Orlando. And I don't remember how I heard that, but, you know, we had been a family that once a year would go to Disney World for a couple of years, and my parents always drove down there, and we talked about the Stars Hall of Fame Wax Museum in the early 80s with the Christopher Reeve wax figure. My parents were such a fan of the Peabody Hotel. They went in Memphis, Tennessee, and once they went there, they loved that hotel because of the ducks. And they took my brother and I believe in maybe 86 or 87, I'm not sure what year it was, to the Peabody. For me, Superboy and seeing that first season blew me away because it was my first connection to seeing something on television that I was able to actually be at. And that was that Peabody Hotel. And there was one of the episodes. And I think that the intro of the show, or at least a couple of them, had shots of that Peabody Hotel in Orlando. And that's because they shot the show there.
That's right. And actually the cast and I think a lot of the crew stayed in that hotel during the filming.
Mm-hmm.
And so season one, of course, was filmed over at Disney MGM, and Sam, I think you were telling me that the rest of the series, once Gerard came on, moved over to the new Universal Studios were just down the street, I think, from Disney MGM. And I remember driving by and seeing Gerard in front of the American flag on the side of one of the studios as I drove by, and I thought that was just the coolest.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of Stage 4 where they were filming.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, Stage 4. And just recently, Gerard told me he went on a tour of the old studio.
Jay, you were talking about that costume looking so similar to Chris Reeves, and that's because it was. It really basically was the same material, same colors, same construction. Of course, the S on his chest had been altered to look more like the trademark DC Comics Superman shield. And, you know, I've closely inspected some of those costumes. They're fantastic. They, of course, John wore it very well, like Chris, because he was very fit. And then they went and changed a lot of those costumes for season two onward, using some of the capes, I think, from one. And even some of Chris Reeve's capes were altered and worn by John and maybe even Gerard. So, yeah, that was exciting for me, too, Jay. I was in my 30s when the show came out. And that was also around the time when, of course, Superman's 50th birthday and the Ruby Spears cartoons had come out around that same time. So Ilya and his dad were really heavily promoting the first season with lots of trailers on TV. I think they were mainly on during the day, weren't they, Sam, as opposed to nighttime? Because it was a daytime show.
It was a daytime show. I know it was on primetime in a couple stations, like around 7 o'clock. For me, being in Chicago, the Channel 50 premiered it at 4 o'clock in the afternoon,
right,
or 4:30. The first episode would be a repeat, and the second one would be a brand new episode. But towards the end of the series, they moved the show around to a couple different time slots. I remember Obituary for a Superhero being on at 11:30 at night because it being in syndication.
So it was all over the place, basically. So it wasn't necessarily an easy show to set your VHS or beta machine up to be able to record it and catch them all.
I remember asking my father to record the last handful of episodes and them not recording and just being so crushed. And yeah, it was pretty funny. I was just like, I'm never going to get to see these.
And I think there's probably a number of listeners today that maybe have never seen the series, Sam, or certainly haven't seen very many episodes.
I mean, going back to discovering the first season with John Noonan, I didn't know there was a first season.
Right.
I didn't know until 1995. Fox 32 in Chicago, for some strange reason, on Saturday and Sunday mornings at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe because they had nothing else to show, decided to show all 100 episodes of Superboy.
Wow, there was a recording opportunity there then.
I did. I recorded all the first season. The first episode I saw from the first season, funny enough, with George Chakiris, Professor Peterson, and Addis Ababa,
yeah,
the kryptonite hitting and creating that crater and those to Addis Ababins, I don't know how you say it, finding the kryptonite and sending it to Professor Peterson. And Clark and Lana and TJ are sitting in the auditorium, and Clark just faints. Seeing that Kryptonite Kills episode was really, really cool for me. I was like, oh my God, they're bringing Superboy back.
I remember when they switched over to Gerard. I hadn't really heard much about the fact that John had left and Gerard had come in. And I remember seeing that season two premiere, and I'm like, oh, it's a new guy. And he was in a wheelchair for much of the episode, too, which I found interesting. But it took me a little bit, quite honestly, a little bit of time to warm up to Gerard because I had just gotten used to John. I also could tell that perhaps the budget of each show had maybe gone up because the, you know, the quality and the look of the flying, et cetera, had improved.
Oh, yeah. And I think a big catalyst at the time, being in 1989, you just had the Batman with Tim Burton come out. You also had Dick Tracy that was very successful at the box office. And the tone of the show changed with Gerard. He was more comfortable in front of the camera. He had more of a presence. I don't want to say John didn't have a presence, but he played it differently. His Clark Kent was more, I don't want to say serious. It was more George Reeves-esque.
Well, it was, and I think that was a progressive thing because the first few episodes I remember seeing with Gerard, he was rather, for lack of a better word, sort of a goober. And he toned that down. Was that something that Gerard suggested that they do, or was that written that way for him? Do you know?
Well, later on in that third season, fourth season, I think he came into his own a little bit more.
Right.
He was more like, okay, it was just too comedic,
right?
I think, and he wanted to tone it down just a little bit more.
You know, I have these box sets, and we're such fans of Sam, and I try to figure out why did I not see more of these episodes, especially the later ones, and I think it was just, you know, I think it was just an age thing that, you know, when this show started, I was 13, and by the time I was hitting 15, my mind probably just didn't connect to every week watching this the way that someone younger would have, so I've enjoyed going back and watching some of these episodes, and absolutely agree that it became a lot more like the comic books and really had a lot more adventure feel in those, you know, second, third, and fourth seasons. Sam, I wanted to ask you, you know, as this show went on and it started to get its fan base, there were some great connections to the Superman films. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you had Bob Harmon, who was the head of the flying unit. He flew, you know, Christopher Reeve. He flew Helen Slater in the Supergirl film, and Gerard Christopher and John Newton. You also had Bob Simmons, or Robert Simmons, who was the line producer.
Yeah, line producer, and he was a producer for the Superman movies, yep.
And Colin Chilvers.
Right, Colin Chilvers, physical effects. Colin, my favorite Colin moment is the helicopter rescue in Superman the movie. He had a lot to do with the Superboy series.
And also, I don't know if many people know this, Jackie Cooper.
Right.
Barry White himself.
Right, right.
Directed an episode of the first season, The Invisible People, which is probably one of the weakest episodes of that first season.
And that's really interesting you say that because he was a very experienced director, television director at that time, having directed a lot of the episodes of MASH. Right. And some other shows.
When you say a weak episode, Sam, you mean storyline and content there, right?
Yes, storylines. It was not like an episode that was critical to the series. Like, it was one of those episodes, oh, you know what, you could gloss over and just...
Right, not one you'd sit a friend down
right
in front of the TV and show as the highlight of the series, right?
Right. It's not one of those episodes.
What are some of the consistencies? I mean, you know, when we get past the John Newton change to Gerard Christopher, obviously, you know, you have Stacey who remained Lana Lang through the entire season, but there are some other changes on the show as well as it evolved.
Right. They got rid of the first Lex Luthor, Scott Wells. They got rid of Michael Mano, who was his henchman, Leo.
And in season two, they, you know, they bring in the guy from Weird Science.
They got rid of Jim Calvert, who played TJ White, and they brought in Alon Mitchell Smith to play Andy McAllister, which was Clark's crazy roommate, who always was hitting on Lana or coming up with some scheme or business scheme to sell Superboy t-shirts or whatever. It was really funny, and Alon had a lot of fun playing that role. With season two, they were going for more cast members like Gerard and Alon, who were already established and comfortable in front of the camera, where Stacy had just exuded that comfort of being in front of the camera. And then they cast Sherman Howard, or Howard Sherman, he likes to change his name every once in a while, as Lex Luthor. That just brought in this even more gravitas to the Lex Luthor role. One minute he can be completely joking around, and the next minute just be complete sinister.
The fans should take note of Sherman, because I think his portrayal of Lex is a real highlight in Superman's history.
And a lot of people don't know that Sherman wrote a couple episodes in the latter part of the series. One of my favorite scenes in the entire series, Superboy and Lex working with each other, trying to get out of that lead mine with kryptonite all around them. And Lex asks Superboy, "What do you really want?" And Superboy says, "Just to live a normal life." Superboy turns to Lex and says, "What would make you happy?" And Lex says, "To be king for a day." And they got it. It's so amazing that Sherman Howard, who was Lex, understood the dichotomy of Superboy and Lex.
Yeah, and I have to give Gerard and the whole cast really a lot of credit, because you could tell there was a great deal of respect and love for those characters. Gerard, I could tell, really worked hard at it, and he even had a producer role or credit, I think, after a while, didn't he, Sam?
Yes, he did, the last season.
There's an interesting connection with Sherman Howard in the Superman movies, besides being like...
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lex Luthor is that he was a villain in Lethal Weapon 2, of course, directed by Richard Donner. He's one of the henchmen, if you will, and Mel Gibson throws his shoulder out of place to get out of the straitjacket that he's been put in, and he's been thrown over into the ocean at a pier. Yeah. And he jumps up on the pier, and Sherman Howard is taken out, basically. So there's a connection with Richard Donner right there.
Let me ask a question just about the show and kind of where it stands now. One of the great ways to reminisce is obviously watching. Like I mentioned, I have a couple. I think I have all these box sets here. But I wonder, you don't see them often in stores anymore. And in a world of Netflix or maybe the DC Universe or Warner Archives, or who owns the show and how can fans see it and why don't we see more of it?
As of right now, Warner Brothers owns the distribution rights to Superboy. It took a long time for them to finally get the rights back. It was kind of fragmented out, very much like the Batman 66 series. We didn't see that for a long, long time.
Right.
Like Carthage Productions owns part of Superboy. Elia, his production company, owns, of course, part of it. Viacom/Paramount own part of it. And it wasn't until 2006 where the deal was struck between Elia, Carthage, and Viacom with Warner Brothers to release that first season. And New Wave Entertainment was the studio that handled all the special features that you see on that first season box set. Then in 2010, you had season two released, and it was just bare bones. It was just the episodes themselves pulled from studio tapes, VHS tapes. So they handpicked the best-looking episodes, and that is what you have on DVD for seasons 2, 3, and 4. And that was through Warner Archives.
So it's never been released as one big box set, Sam, has it?
No, and this year, well, being the 30th anniversary of the second season, and last year being the 30th of the first, nothing was done to commemorate the anniversary.
If they don't want to buy DVDs or they don't know where to find them, where should they go?
Well, if you don't want to buy the physical DVDs or hunt them down on eBay or just go on Warner Archives and buy them, Prime Video, which used to be Amazon Prime Video, has all four seasons.
Right. I've seen them on there. And in fact, that's where I'm watching them now. And they, to me, look better than the DVDs.
Well, they're also on iTunes. You could download them digitally on iTunes. And the digital files, streaming-wise, look way better than the DVDs. That's because the DVDs are compressed.
Yeah.
So if you're into the physical media and you love the artwork and the photos and all that, definitely go out and buy the DVD box sets. I have them all. I love them. And I think there's another place you can go, too. Doesn't DC have something?
Yeah, DC has given it a second life on the DC Universe app, and they really pushed it when they first launched. It was emblazed. Right when you open the app, there was a picture of John Newton, and when you scroll through the different seasons, there's different pictures of Gerard, some of the villains. They really did a nice job, and I just want to thank Mike Carlin over at DC, who also had a big hand with this series, for pushing the series on the DC Universe app. He's been a really great supporter of what I've been doing with Superboy Legacy over the last few years, since I started it, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm really grateful, Sam, that you pushed so hard to get these out. I know you've had a friendship with Gerard and the other stars for a long time. And like the Christopher Reeve movie stars, they're wonderful people. I've met many of them. John and Gerard are just great. John's got a wicked sense of humor. And
we spent a lot of time
willing
with him, Jim.
That's right. He was in Metropolis in 2018 for their celebration, his second time. In fact, the first time I went to Metropolis in 1994, John was a guest, and he was so humbled by the fact that he was on stage with Phyllis Coates, Tommy Bond, and Kirk Allen. You know, Tommy and Kirk aren't with us anymore, and he was really young, and he came back, and it was a great Q&A that we did for Sam.
Yep.
And, you know, they're just great people, just like the Christopher Reeve family of stars. But each episode was what, about how many minutes?
About 22 minutes in length.
And then 8 minutes or so of commercials. And did that carry through the whole series? Was that about the same? Or did they actually get longer?
No, they were consistent at 22 minutes, and they told really complete stories.
Right, but there were occasionally some two- or three-parters, though.
Right, like in season three, the Road's Not Taken episodes, which I consider, if I was going to show this series to somebody and to highlight what the series is about, I would show that.
Like Christopher Reeve in Superman 3, he had a unique opportunity in this series to expand his horizons even more, if you will, with being able to play the Sovereign Superboy.
Right.
And we were photographing the other day the Sovereign costume. You own an original screen-worn Sovereign costume. And it's amazing the reaction on social media to that one, even more than the regular costumes.
Right.
So that's also episodes that you would highly recommend to fans?
I would highly recommend. There was also an episode, Body Swap, where he swapped minds with Lex Luthor, and Gerard loved playing
role. Wow.
Because he got, again, to play the villain.
I got to go back and revisit that one. I don't think I've seen that in a long time. Do you remember that one, Jay?
Hey, listen, you guys have left out one of my favorites, and that was the episode in season two where we got to see Jor-El and Lara in what looked like very similar costumes to the ones from Superman the Movie's Krypton.
So who's Jor-El in that, Sam?
George Lazenby.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service, James Bond. Isn't that something?
That's crazy. And Britt Eklund was Lara.
Oh, wow. And she really looked similar to Susanna York.
Yes, she
did. From Superman the Movie. She really did. Those costumes, I've seen those.
Yes.
And those are fantastic.
That two-parter was Escape to Earth and Abandon Earth.
Oh, right, right.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Stuart Whitman and Salome Jens, who played Ma and Pa Kent. They were fantastic.
They really were. And Stuart seems like such a likable guy. And the way he sounded and looked, he actually reminded me of Richard Donner.
Yeah, he does look like Richard Donner, doesn't he?
He really does. Let's talk about another classic television star that appeared on the show, and that's Ron Ely.
That's right. He was in The Road to Hell, parts one and two. He played the older Superman, and they couldn't say Superman because they didn't have the rights.
Now, Ron Ely, for some of you that don't know who he is, he's a very tall, handsome actor who portrayed Tarzan on television in the 60s, and I have really strong memories of that. But we got to meet him, Sam, in Los Angeles at a 2012 show where Ilya, Jim Calvert,
T.J. White
in season one of Superboy, kind of the Jimmy Olsen character, and John Ames Newton was there. And it was a small show, but wasn't that a lot of fun?
Let's talk about what happened here in the end. Why did the show end?
It ended abruptly, really abruptly, to be honest. And the show was doing really well in the ratings. DC stopped approving scripts. Warner Brothers saw the show. They didn't have any hands in the show, so they wanted a slice of the proverbial super pie. DC basically, when they stopped approving scripts, basically shut the show down. So, and Warner Brothers, seeing it, the success, wanted to start their own super production, which led to Lois and Clark. The show pretty much got its legs cut out from under it. Each season was getting better and better. And like I said, Warner Brothers, they wanted their own production. They put a lien on the series, so the show couldn't be rerun in syndication, which is why a number of fans have never seen it. A generation of Superman fans were deprived of Superboy. I remember going to conventions in Chicago looking for photos and whatever I could get from the show, and people just giving you that perplexed look on their face like, don't you mean Lois and Clark? Don't you mean Smallville? No, I mean Superboy. There was a number of times in Metropolis we showed a couple episodes the last time we were there with John Newton.
Right.
And people were like, I never knew the show existed.
And they all enjoyed it, didn't they?
Everybody that was in that screening room got up and cheered and clapped their hands.
Isn't that something?
It was really something to behold.
Well, Superboy is really classic. I mean, the classic costume, bright colors, fun, adventurous, heart-filled stories, and it really is a gift. It's really an extension of the movies, if you will. That's how I see it. That's why I enjoy them. So how did Gerard possibly get involved with Lois and Clark? Did he?
He did, actually. He went in for a reading and a test for Clark Kent. He went in for the reading and said to, I think, one of the production assistants there, not to mention that he did Superboy. He did the reading. Everybody in the room, they loved him. And they were like, oh my God, we found our guy. But then when they saw his resume, they're like, oh, you've done this already.
Mm-hmm.
And they escorted him out of the room, and the rest is history. And then 2 weeks later, they found Dean Cain. And I have nothing against Dean Cain. I thought he did a great job as Clark, but I really didn't believe his Superman.
Yeah, I liked his interaction with Terry Hatcher quite a bit, as Clark in particular. And that's an interesting connection. Can we go back for a minute and talk about auditions? John Ames Newton auditioned, and he was wearing a Christopher Reeve Superman costume, wasn't he?
He did.
And then Gerard auditioned, and what was he wearing?
Gerard was wearing John's suit.
Isn't that interesting?
And I have that screen test.
Didn't Henry Cavill also wear a Christopher Reeve costume in an audition?
Yes.
Yeah. Isn't that something? And a Christopher Reeve costume actually appears in the Superboy series. What episodes were those?
Those were in my first two episodes that I ever saw, the Bizarro, the Thing of Steel, and the Battle with Bizarro.
Well, who was wearing it?
Alon Mitchell-Smith from Weird Science.
Oh, right. He was wearing it like he was going to a Halloween party or something? So it's an original Superman 3 costume, I believe.
Yes.
That Ilya owned.
Yes.
I suspect that the wardrobe people for Superboy probably used that costume as a reference to make all the Superboy costumes.
Oh boy, especially the belts. I mean, you guys know. And that brings me to kind of put a big bow on this podcast today. You know, Sam, a couple of years ago in Metropolis when we were hanging out with you, and I remember standing in the theater and hearing your passion for this, and I remember saying to you, my God, you've got to get one of these costumes. You've got to get a costume. And you had been trying so hard to get something from this show, and not many people in the collecting world get an opportunity like you got. But, I mean, you really probably have the lion's share of Superboy stuff.
To be here this week with Jim, photographing this stuff and actually handling it, and just the chance to own these things that are part of my childhood has been something just I can't believe. I have to pinch myself. And I was telling you this, it's so majestic. It has this majestic quality to take these costumes out and to photograph them and just see just the detail.
Yeah, the camera brings them alive. They really do.
Right.
And it's such a remarkable opportunity for me as a photographer and fan of all of this. I can't thank you enough, Sam. This is just, it really is, like you said, it's mind-blowing. You can't believe it's all sitting here in front of you.
Right.
And right now we've got Gerard Christopher's director's chair sitting in the studio with an original Gerard Christopher cape draped over it, one of his royal blue costume tunics and belt, and his boots. And we're going to proceed with more photography after the podcast. But you'll be able to enjoy this stuff for a long, long time. And being able to share it like me, it's a very important aspect of your whole existence within this community to be able to share it with the fans.
And like the other big thing is you'll never see suits like these again.
No. No, I read an article recently where they interviewed the lady who made the Shazam movie costumes. And she said, yeah, there's some padding in it. The days of the Christopher Reeve costume where you have no padding and no accenting.
Right.
Are in the past.
We saw in the season 2 hero tunic, the snaps that held the cape in place that I showed
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
Which came off. It was really interesting to see that the stress that those capes put on those two little buttons.
And the capes are so heavy. In fact, they were heavier than that evil costume cape I was handling from the Superman 3.
Right.
When we photographed that last year. And it's just interesting to see the similarities and differences. And, you know, I think we've got some more photo ops coming up in the future that
That's right.
I'm excited to tell everybody about eventually.
Well, I think it's important for our Caped Wonder Superman podcast fans to know, as we mentioned earlier, that whether it's DC Universe or whether it's Amazon Prime, or you find these episodes of Superboy and check them out, because they really are. They're great. They're great to watch. They bring you back. And there's just not a lot on TV other than maybe some of the, you know, some of the animated fun stuff that comes out here and there. But there's just nothing like watching these. And I encourage everybody, I know Jim does as well, to really check them out.
Same goes with those Ruby Spirits cartoons that came out around the same time. A lot of people told me they'd never even heard of them. So definitely try to find all of that. It's great stuff. We don't have any movies in the theater right now and no other TV shows. There is Krypton, of course, but that focuses on a different part of the legacy. But I'm enjoying them. Amazon Prime's the way to go for me. Mm. It's easy, and they look great.
Sam, thank you so much for being with us today. I hope you guys have some more fun and continue to give us some great photos, and we love checking those out. And for Caped Wonder Superman podcast fans, don't forget the Facebook page is the best way to jump on and say hi to us. And, of course, CapedWonder.com, the great website where you can find all things Superman the movie and beyond when it comes to the Christopher Reeve legacy. Jim, another great, fun, special edition podcast today.
Yeah, Jay, thanks so much. It's great to have Sam actually here because, like our Sarah Douglas podcast, we've got Sam in the studio like we had Sarah, and it's great to be able to look over at him while we're talking and interact.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody, for listening, as always, and we will see you again soon.
Thanks so much, everyone. Stay super out there.
You've been listening to the Caped Wonders Superman podcast on the iHeartRadio app. Jay Towers is a Detroit TV anchor and morning radio host on 100.3 WNIC Detroit. Follow Jay on Instagram and Twitter at Jay Towers. Jim Bowers is the founder and editor of CapedWonder.com, the home of Caped Wonder Superman imagery. Follow Jim on Instagram at Caped Wonder and on Twitter at Caped Wonder Jim.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.